Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah! Welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston, and it just seems like old Toots and John James hate government so damn much they can't get enough of these government jobs. In fact, for Tudor Dixon, she can't even decide which government job she wants to do. She released a statement earlier this week saying that she'll run for governor or for the open U.S. Senate seat in 2026. Again, she hates government so much she can't decide what she wants to do inside government. Of course, Tudes got destroyed by Governor Whitmer back in the 2022 race, losing by 11 points. And since then, she's been enjoying a nice cushy job running her own podcast, which is probably where she ought to stay. But of course, people like Tudes, they need the limelight. They need government-paid jobs and will most likely now actually run for the U.S. Senate seat that Democrat Gary Peters is leaving behind, since MAGA Republican John James is reportedly going to make a run for governor, and he expects his dear leader Trump to endorse his run, which means that Tudes would just have to settle for the MAGA Republican Senate nomination, if she gets it. Of course, there could be a good primary there. Now, John James is a pure Christian nationalist nut job, and will cozy up to Betsy DeVos and corporate authoritarian power without hesitation. That is the worst part. But unlike Tudes, James did win two House races, albeit the second one was against the guy that he beat in the first race. That was Carl Malinga, who didn't respond to my inquiries of coming onto the show last year because, hey, I just run a podcast. What do I know? And Carl really didn't light the world on fire, which is too bad because there were some really good young candidates who were ready to fight against John James, but they lost in that primary race. Now, on the Democratic Party side, we got word last week that former Biden Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg decided not to run for the Senate, which is probably a good move for him. While a smart guy and a pretty decent debater, he's not a Michigander. And if we spent a whole year ripping apart and ripping on Florida Mike Rogers during his Senate run last year, MAGA Republicans would have had every right to have used that same argument against Pete Buttigieg. Besides, I don't think Michigan is big enough for him. I think that Buttigieg is just going to run for president in 2028. And also, Democrats have a pretty big bench, as names like State Senator Mallory McMorrow are already starting to circulate, and the senator said that she'd release a statement on whether or not she's running soon. McMorrow's got a new book out, and so she was already about to make the media rounds, and I guess the timing right now couldn't be more perfect for her. But Congresswoman Haley Stevens says that she's also interested, which would then set up an Oakland County showdown since they're both from that area. But regardless, Democrats need youth, and they need candidates who are ready to actually fight and not appear to give into appeasement and weakness, kind of like what we're seeing from Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer. And while I'm thinking about it, the aforementioned Democratic Michigan Senator Gary Peters is exactly the illustration of the problem that Senate Democrats are having, actually what Democrats across the country are having. While Dear Leader Trump, Elon Musk, and MAGA Republicans are steamrolling through their agenda, Senate Democratic leadership is simply just getting rolled. And worse, it appears like they don't even know any other part to play than getting rolled. Even Nancy Pelosi gave a backhanded comment towards Schumer, saying she wouldn't give anything away for nothing. And that's exactly what Schumer has done. And his little media blitz at damage control here this week has been an utter disaster. For example, while engaging in a bit of a debate with Chris Hayes on MSNBC, which I saw on social media, Schumer said, "If our democracy is at risk," and Hayes retorted, "It is at risk." You see, these guys, they just aren't getting it. They aren't getting it. Why? Because they've enjoyed living in the coddled Senate lifestyle, and they aren't seeing how they're behaving like Neville Chamberlain as Hitler was beginning his European assault. And look, Schumer didn't even try to negotiate something for Democrats. He didn't even try, and then says, hey, you people out there, you do all the work, because those of us here in Washington, we can't do a damn thing to stop this fascist takeover of our government. Yeah, Chuck, it's called being a leader. You can do something, but I shouldn't just simply be piling on Chuck Schumer. This problem of being weak, of showing appeasement, of ineffective leadership is one of the leading symptoms explaining why Democrats are out of power and why they enjoy just a 27% approval rating. 27%. It's that they refuse to fight. We are not in the 1950s anymore, where you could always say, my friend and colleague on the other side of the aisle. No, MAGA Republicans are fighting a war. Democrats are longing for something that will never return. We need fighters for both the working class and for democracy. And we need stronger messaging. Oh man, I know I sound like a broken record, but that is the truth. No, that doesn't mean that we hang those who we said we supported and leave them out to dry, like, for example, the entire working class. As I said about the gubernatorial race, the candidate that stands up for the working class while attacking corporate greed and corruption, and who also stands up for those who can't stand up for themselves, that will be the person serving as the next United States Senator from the great state of Michigan. Guys, that's the name of the game. For example, progressive state representative and friend of this podcast, Betsy Kafia from Traverse City, posted the following on the site formerly known as Twitter, and this is what she said, and I quote, every governor should be doing what Governor Walz from Minnesota and Governor J.B. Pritzker of Illinois are doing. I'm already doing my part with the town hall that's already at capacity less than a week since we've opened registration. If you're a Dem with a mic, use it to amplify real harms to your constituents. Hear, hear. Representative Betsy Kafia, as usual, hits the nail right on the head. And she was highlighting a post by Illinois Democratic Governor Pritzker, who said that he'll be traveling all across the state of Illinois explaining how Elon and Trump's cuts are hurting farmers, families, and so many more in his state. The people need to know that someone is hearing them, that somebody understands their concerns, their fears, their great fears, actually. And they need to hear somebody out there rhetorically engaging in a battle with those pushing for a white Christian nationalist / corporate authoritarian agenda. Which begs the question, why isn't Michigan's very own governor, Democrat Gretchen Whitmer, doing the same thing? I mean, where is she? Where is she? I mean, I haven't held back my disappointment and dismay at Michigan's junior U.S. Senator Alyssa Slotkin for not realizing and treating Musk and Dear Leader Trump as the threats to America's democracy and working class that they are. But hey, give Senator Slotkin credit when credit is due. Even she voted against that horrible stopgap spending bill that Chuck Schumer and a handful of other Democrats voted to pass. They showed appeasement, and Alyssa Slotkin chose to go the other path. She did not vote for appeasement, at least not that time. Now, Senator Slotkin explained that she wouldn't vote for the thing because of infrastructure cuts and cuts to protecting the Great Lakes. But she also stated the obvious, that she was not voting for the bill because it contained zero assurances that Elon Musk would continue to try to redirect or cut the funding to programs in the bill. That was the main point. There's nothing stopping Musk from still doing what he's been doing since day one. You see, Slotkin did what anyone else with a brain would do under the same circumstances. Fight to get something in return for your vote, Chuck Schumer. Not hard to do. The people want to know that they are being heard. They want to know that people are fighting for them. I mean, what we're seeing isn't good, everyone, but Democrats cannot stop getting in their own way and tripping over themselves. And it's hurt their once working class brand. And it's hurt their overall ability to connect with so many voters right now. Now, of course, I'm not talking about all Democrats, but I'm talking about many in leadership positions. They refuse to ignore party consultants who rake in all kinds of cash for very little return on investment for the people, many of the people who gave to their campaigns. And lest I remind some people out there that Chuck Schumer, back in 2016, sold out the Democratic Party's once solid working class background when he said,
"For every blue-collar Democrat we will lose in Western PA, we will pick up 2-3 moderate Republicans in the suburbs of Philadelphia." And you can repeat that in Ohio and Illinois and Wisconsin. The voters who are most out there figuring out what to do are not the blue-collar Democrats. They are the college-educated Republicans who lean Republican or independent and in the suburbs.
Now, I remember when he said that, wondering, what the hell is he talking about? Why the hell would you sell out your working-class voters who've stuck by the party ever since FDR, if not earlier than that? But Chuck Schumer says that he's the best to lead the Senate as he's currently the minority leader. However, before I give all kinds of gushing reviews for Senator Slotkin, she knows how to really get me back to criticizing her again. Slotkin said at a roundtable at a food bank in Flint on Wednesday that, and this is according to CNN, "Everyone you mentioned has a lot of words, but what have they actually done to change the situation with Donald Trump and the cuts and the attacks on our judiciary and the attacks on our Constitution?" Slotkin asked before touting her national security and intelligence background, which she noted required prudent planning. Slotkin said that she can't chain herself to the White House and become an activist full-time because she has to focus on addressing issues like federal cuts. Quote, "All of those things require me to be more than just an AOC. I can't do what she does because we live in a purple state and I'm a pragmatist," she said. Ah, yes, a pragmatist, a so-called centrist, time-honored tradition of being considered a very serious person. Look, I'm all for pragmatic approaches in life, and sometimes that's a good strategy. But when the house is burning down, we need action. Senator Slotkin, we need action, and being a mushy-mouthed, so-called centrist isn't helping anyone. You say Michigan's a purple state and that you can't be an AOC. Well, dear leader, Trump won this past election by just over a percentage point, and he lost the first race by millions of votes. When has he ever acted like a pragmatist? Or when has he ever pulled back on his agenda? He never has. Why is it always Democrats who are the ones that fear that they can't be, you know, Democrats whenever they win elections? And let's be fair, Senator. You got lucky facing Florida Mike Rogers, and you still barely beat him by trying to portray yourself as a quote-unquote centrist, pragmatic, and serious person. You know, it turns out putting out pics of you serving neocons like George W. Bush, who also tried to privatize Social Security just over 20 years ago, while signing massive tax breaks and subsidies to corporate donors, yeah, that didn't exactly move the old needle as your highly paid and out-of-touch Democratic consultants told you to believe. But even more, what AOC, Bernie, Jasmine Crockett, Governor Pritzker, and Governor Andy Beshear in Kentucky, what they know all too well is that Democrats don't have a cohesive messaging strategy to present to the people. Democrats are always playing defense. I swear, sometimes I think Democrats out there feel better and they feel more comfortable playing defense, and they are rarely playing offense. Back to that CNN story, it reads, "Yelling," Senator Slotkin said, "won't stop Trump from enacting his agenda." Quote, "I get it that it makes people feel good to see people yelling, but not one of those words is stopping the actual things that Donald Trump is doing, and I am about action, not words, and I will stand by that as long as I live," she said. Huh, so she's about action. What kinds of action, Senator? Voting for the MAGA Republican Lake and Riley Act that only ripped away due process for migrant workers, which we know is a major slippery slope? Or how about voting for a number of Dear Leader's appointees? Or worse, how about being caught completely flat-footed over how Musk and his corporate authoritarian friends are running rampant inside our government? Again, I just feel like some are not getting it. And that also includes Governor Whitmer, who still remains out of the spotlight and who still cannot present a bold, progressive vision to counter the white Christian nationalist MAGA Republicans here in Michigan. I'm not sure what her strategy is all about, or who she's planning to win over by being completely out of the limelight and refusing to go after the MAGA Republicans, especially those in the White House, and especially fighting against MAGA Republicans here in our state legislature. I feel like Michigan Democrats have completely lost their way after they started out firing on all cylinders in 2023. And now we're reading how a sizable number of them voted to help a MAGA Republican majority in the state house pass a tax cut that doesn't help the working class here in the state, and it only serves to help the rich elite donor base. What is going on? As the Free Press's Clara Hendrickson wrote, the state house cut Michigan's income tax rate from 4.25% to 4.05% effective on January 1st of this year. Most Michigan income tax revenue goes to the state's general fund, the main source for funding state government. But income tax dollars also go to the state's fund for schools and roads. So the purpose of this bill, everyone, is to starve government funding. And that's what it does by slashing over $500 million in tax revenues for this year and over $700 million in 2 years. $700 million. And as Hendrickson's story notes, an Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy analysis on the proposed tax cut found 64% of it would go to the wealthiest 20%, while those making under $27,000 would see an average tax cut of $11. Wow, that's really helping the working class here, MAGA Republicans. You see, Michigan has a flat tax rate, which is something we also ought to do away with, but can only be done via state referendum. So any cut to the state income tax is a boon for the MAGA Republican donor base, while it destroys the spending that's needed for education, health, infrastructure, and so on. It's just another example of how MAGA Republicans serve their rich corporate donors, and it's also a perfect example for Democrats to show how they are for the working class in the state. And as Clara Hendrickson notes in that same story in the Free Press, the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy reported on how unfair taxes are to the working class in Michigan due to the state's failed flat tax scheme. Quote, according to the Tax Policy Organization's index measuring the impact on each state's tax structure on income inequality, Michigan has the 35th most regressive and local tax system in the United States of America, the group's January 2024 Who Pays report found. Income disparities between high-income taxpayers and other families are larger in Michigan after state and local taxes are collected than before, the report states. Wow. And yet, knowing this to be the fact, knowing this to be true, seven Democrats in the state house voted with MAGA Republicans to gut education funding so more money could be funneled to the elites in the state. Messaging. Democrats have to get better at it, and they have to start fighting for the working class. But here's a part from that story that really got me, and it's a quote from MAGA Republican State Representative Kathy Schmaltz of Jackson, who sponsored this bill and said in response to knowing that it really doesn't help the working class, quote, every little bit helps. Yes. Every little bit does help, doesn't it, Kathy? Just like every little bit helps when you voted to cut a living wage for servers and bartenders just a month ago. I mean, you and all your MAGA Republican friends in Lansing proudly voted to water down a higher guaranteed wage for sub-minimum wage workers. I mean, that would have been a great way to give the working class a little bit of help. But you didn't. No, you gave some scraps to the worker while funneling more money back up to the donor class, because that's what you were essentially put there to do. And yet, some Democrats didn't message against that. No, instead, many Democrats decided to join in that effort by gutting living wages for workers. And of course, Governor Whitmer signed that bill into law. Just unreal. It was right there for the taking. It was right there for Michigan Democrats to say, we are standing up for the working class, and they failed to do it. Yet there's MAGA Republicans gutting the essential pay for workers. And then they say, here, workers, here's $11 from this tax cut that we want to pass just so that we can funnel more and more money up to the donor base. Hey, look over here and let's talk about a non-existent problem like transgender high schoolers playing in sports. I mean, these people are trying to gut spending on Medicaid, on public education, on environmental protections, and more. And Democrats couldn't message against it? MAGA Republicans are trying to starve government spending, and Democrats have to not only vote them down, but also provide a bold stance, not only explaining why these services are needed, but how we ought to strengthen them by raising corporate tax rates and passing laws limiting corporations like DTE from running our state government. Run against corporate corruption. It's that easy. It's time for the people to be heard, and Democrats screaming is what's needed right now because MAGA Republicans are doing what they want and they feel extra emboldened. The time to hesitate is through, as the door said, and the time for pragmatism is dead. And that's why it's so great that we've got some strong progressive groups out there like Indivisible doing the organizing and the messaging to counteract against the corporate authoritarian takeover of our country. Like up in the Traverse City area, Indivisible chapters like Traverse Indivisible and Leelanau Indivisible are shining a spotlight on the failed representation by MAGA Republican Congressman Jack Bergman in Michigan's 1st Congressional District. I mean, now, we have highlighted Bergman here before, as he's hardly really ever in his district, and he's even got another home in Louisiana, and he refuses to hold town hall events because, you know, he's too good and smart for those stupid little peasants that he supposedly fights for. Well, even though he's not holding town halls, Traverse and Leelanau Indivisible are holding one in his honor this Saturday, and it's already sounding like it's going to be a full house. I have no doubt about that. A leader from Traverse Indivisible, John DeSpelder, is standing by to talk more about this town hall event, how Jack Bergman's selling out his people, and how more of you can get involved with your local Indivisible chapter in Michigan and hold those MAGA Republicans responsible for allowing Elon Musk to rob us financially while dear leader Trump tries to rob our democracy. But more importantly, we're talking about going on offense with our progressive values. You're listening to LOL.
It's the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. Need to give Pat a piece of your mind? Or do you have some stories you think Pat should cover? Email him at leftoflansing@gmail.com. And if you have Michigan beer ideas for Pat, he'll love you even more. Now, here's Pat.
As I said last week, please email me, leftoflansing@gmail.com, if you'd like to continue talking about a specific topic I brought up here on the show or on my Monday musings or my Friday shorts. And if you'd like to let me know of events that are happening across the state that you think need to be highlighted, or maybe you believe I should bring up a certain topic that deserves attention as corporate authoritarianism continues to tighten its stranglehold on all of America, thanks to MAGA Republicans. Just email me, leftoflansing@gmail.com. As you heard last week, I visited an event held by the good people of Indivisible Central Michigan, where they highlighted why we must fight back against Elon and dear leader Trump's plans to wreck popular social safety nets like Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, food stamps. And as Alice Chiku from Indivisible Central Michigan told us, there are Indivisible groups across Michigan that are connecting with thousands of people out there and providing the messaging that is needed to fight back against MAGA Republicans who continue to attack the working class and also our democracy. And one of those groups is Traverse Indivisible, and they're getting ready to hold a town hall event this week for MAGA Republican Congressman Jack Bergman. Well, actually, Jack is refusing to hold a town hall meeting because, you know, having to face his constituents is something that scares the hell out of Bergman, especially as he and his fellow MAGA Republicans, of course, are voting to destroy America's working class. Now, the people being represented, so-called, by these MAGA Republicans in Congress deserve to hear why slashing Medicaid and Medicare and Social Security, or why voting for extra tax breaks for corporations, or the gutting of our universities, the gutting of our Department of Education, the gutting of the EPA, and just for simply refusing to follow our rules of law in the United States Constitution. These guys should make themselves available to all their constituents to explain how this will somehow benefit the working class. I mean, you would think that just seems like common sense. But of course, MAGA Republicans, they always say they're tough people, right? That they really tell like it is. No, they will always go running away because that's what bullies normally do. But thankfully, groups like Traverse Indivisible are doing what MAGA Republicans in Congress are afraid to do, and that is educate their people on what is happening. John DeSpelder, spokesperson and one of the leaders of Traverse Indivisible, is joining us here to take a little time out of his busy schedule to talk with us here this week. John, thanks so much for, you know, just spending a few moments here out of your hectic schedule to appear here on Left of Lansing. I do greatly appreciate it.
Thanks, Pat. It's good to be here.
Traverse Indivisible is joining up, I believe, with Leelanau Indivisible to hold a Jack Bergman Town Hall event on March 22nd, this coming Saturday. So can you talk more about this event and what you are hoping to achieve with it?
Well, as you know, Mr. Bergman has not held a town hall in his district. What he hadn't mentioned, though, is the last town hall he held was in 2017 in his district. So it's been 8 years. We haven't seen much of him. We have heard that he's been in town. He kind of creeps in, just does some photo ops, maybe meets with people that are friendly with him, and then he's gone again. But from the feedback we've heard from people that have tried to actually meet with him, if they have been less than in agreement with him on Facebook, he has refused to meet with them. He's refused to meet with Indivisibles. As you know, we invited him to this event. We were not blessed with a response from him, but we did find out from a news source that his spokesperson had said so. So it was sort of like the playing telephone or gossip. We heard through the grapevine that he wasn't going to come. So we knew that ahead of time, at least from his public pronouncements, but we've really felt everything that's been happening with the Trump administration's attack on our democracy, our institutions, all the things that have been happening around the country that we've just been watching with horror. We really felt that whether Jack showed up or not, we needed to have an opportunity for people to speak out. And that's what we're planning on doing. The venue where we're holding the event holds 400 people. That was sold out in 3 days. We're expecting to have 90 minutes of people basically telling their stories and asking questions of Jack. And it is a way for them to express their concerns in a public forum simply because they are not able to talk directly to him.
I've talked about Jack Bergman here before, and you just brought it up about how he hasn't held a town hall, you said, what, 8 years, right?
8 years, yes.
And I know that's just something that isn't news up there for that for those who have to live up there in District 1, that this has been, like you said, it's just been a recurring theme with him that he's been just absent for everybody.
Yeah, he has been. And apparently he was scarred by the event that happened. And he keeps repeating this, that people apparently, according to him, were treated him unkindly in some way. I wasn't there. I can't really speak to that. But it was just interesting that somebody who represents strongness and, you know, fortitude and the ability to survive against enemy fire is not able to survive meeting with people who may not disagree with him. And so, again, we have credible evidence that he does not spend most of his time in Michigan. There have been people in the UP that have reported that his home is not occupied in the winter. And some other people have said that it's only occupied very short times in the summer. But there is a spot in Louisiana that appears to be where he spends most of his time. So we've started to somewhat jokingly refer to him as Jack Crawdaddy Bergman in honor of that. One of our fellow groups up in Houghton, a brand new group of Indivisibles that formed in Keweenaw, just held their town hall last night. They had a set of recipes that they had cooked up that were, you know, all based on the kind of tropical, exotic, warm weather sort of things that you might enjoy if you were in Louisiana.
Nice. You know, it's, I think I know what you're talking about, though. He was talking about some event that he felt wrong. And I think is it the same interview where he said something like it was like being with a bunch of middle school kids?
Yes.
Yep. And it's funny, though, John, because I seem to recall these same people, you know, the MAGA Republicans celebrating, let's say, back in 2009 and 2010, when they would go attend town halls held by Democratic office holders. And they were doing that under the moniker back then of the Tea Party. And that's where they criticized Democrats for bills, especially Obamacare, that was being debated at the time. And that seemed to get all kinds of coverage within the right wing media circles. And let's be honest, with the mainstream media, but at least Democratic office holders would show up. But now, since they're in power, people like Jack are now in power, they believe that they're kind of above the people. At least that's the way it looks to me. And I think that's one great part about what Indivisible groups like Traverse and in Leelanau are doing by holding this kind of an event, is that it does really help illustrate how insulated and untouchable guys like Jack Bergman really do feel.
It's sad and it's hypocritical. You're right about the Tea Party. No disrespect to the Tea Party. In a lot of ways, Indivisible, if you do your research, was modeled after the success of the Tea Party by being able to organize local people. And, you know, for all of the disagreements we would have with Tea Party people, we never once suspected that they were not local and they were not genuine in the way that they were feeling. They had some concerns, for sure. We only wish that Mr. Bergman would knock it off. He claimed that we are funded by George Soros, which is, so what? It's legal. And so what? Is there some problem with Mr. Soros? He's, I think, a pretty serious person that wants to have some civil discourse, and he's supportive of that. But honestly, for this town hall, we are in the process of funding that town hall completely by local contributions. We started a funding drive just yesterday. We're estimating that the cost of the event is around $3,000. That's for the venue, that's for the tech support, that's for all of the ancillaries that go with putting on an event of this size. And it will be live streamed, by the way. And so far, in just a little over a day, we are two-thirds of the way to our goal. These people that are contributing are people that care. They're people that are real people. They're not corporations. They're not shills. They're not outsiders. They are people that really care about the country, and they are very upset about the kind of, quote, leadership that Jack Bergman is exercising in the name of the First District.
You know, when I attended that Save Medicaid and Social Security event in Mount Pleasant that I talked about in the open here last week that was held by Indivisible Central Michigan, we talked about, let's say, the efforts to gut Medicaid and how over 120,000 rural Michiganders could lose their Medicaid, not to mention how many millions of children throughout the state could also lose their Medicaid if Musk, Trump, and MAGA Republicans like Jack Bergman slash the spending. I feel like this is simply another example of how MAGA Republicans say that they care about rural voters, but their actions continuously are showing or actually hurting those same rural voters. I was just wondering if I could get your take on that.
Well, you know, if you look at what's been happening, certainly with the kind of, you know, health insurance that Medicaid offers to children and to adults, it's something that has made a gigantic difference in the quality of their lives. They're able to get treatment. They're able to avoid having further complications. They're able to manage chronic impairments and chronic conditions in a way that keeps them from getting sicker. And it's something that it's clear that Mr. Musk, Mr. Trump, Mr. Bergman don't really care about the impacts on these people. And somehow they are justifying that that's a way to avoid government waste, when really what it's doing is it's avoiding the kind of service that we need to provide for people in order that they have better lives and in order that they can be more productive citizens. It is just abysmal that it's happening. It's cruel. And if you look at some of the facial expressions of some of the legislators, not Mr. Bergman, but Mr. Musk, for example, there's a certain amount of glee that's taking place. And I think over time, the voters, and I just watched something this morning, it was a number of voters in a conversation, and they were Michigan voters, they had all voted for Trump. And every single one of them said, we didn't vote for this. We weren't thinking that this kind of thing was going to happen. We thought Mr. Trump was going to go in and do things that would set things right. But what they're doing is they're tearing things down. You know, this is not a statistical sample, but I think it's a good anecdotal sample of how I think there's a lot of voters' remorse that's taking place. One of the things that we're emphasizing with Travers Indivisible is leaving a space for disaffected Republicans, people who are, shall we say, maybe in the old Millikan Republican vein, to come join us. And we're not asking them to become Democrats. We're not even asking them to become independents. We don't want them necessarily to even become liberals, although they'd be more welcome to do that. But we want them to join us in the fight to protect our institutions and country, our democracy. I mean, as you can see, the Trump administration right now is just so active in just tearing down everything that has taken decades in just thousands of people's devotion over the years to build up. They're just ripping it down as quickly as they can.
You brought up on all of the different types of people that you're trying to attract to Indivisible, talking about some of those disaffected Trump voters or those Millikan Republicans here in Michigan, or even some independents. But do you think that you're able to make some connection here with maybe some of those people who just said, I don't know if I really see much of a difference with either party, so I'm just going to sit this one out.
There certainly are people that just simply are just not going to believe anything that the government does is good. I don't think that's actually a very large number. Mm-hmm. And I think once they start to see the impacts, they'll realize that government has done a lot of good. But there are a lot of people, and I've had some conversations with them, that are Republicans. This is ironic, but I just don't feel like I can give much information about them because of how sensitive their positions are. There's so much hostility on the right. There's so much social pressure. There are threats, not just against progressives, but against Republicans that don't want to support Trump. And so we try to respect their privacy, but honestly, I've had several conversations. I'm a member of a chat group that reaches across both sides of the aisle, and none of these people that I talk to are at all supportive of the actions that have been taken by Elon Musk and Mr. Trump and are supported by Jack Bergman.
John, how did you get involved with Traverse Indivisible?
I was one of the founders back in 2017. You know, Indivisible formed end of 2016. Groups started forming around the country. There was a group that started in Traverse City, and actually there were two of them. And I was one of the originals with one of those groups. Several years ago, the two groups merged. I should add that one of the other founders of a group is now a state representative and from our area, State Representative Betsy Cofia.
Ah.
I think we were all attracted to Indivisible out of a sense that we could not believe what had just happened with Trump's election. And I think over those first 4 years of Trump's presidency, I think everybody started to realize that this was something that had to be taken seriously. It took a while to sink in. And certainly with this second presidency of Trump's, it's clear from the get-go that he's serious. He means business. And Project 2025 is going great guns.
So I understand that this is in response to what we're seeing with Donald Trump, and especially like when it got started back in 2017 when he won for the first time. But is there more of a hope to be growing Indivisible into and the values that you guys profess to make that into a stronger national kind of movement?
Well, I think it clearly is. There's no doubt about that. And just to give you an example, up until about, well, since up until this past election, there were in Jack Bergman's district, I think, two, maybe three Indivisible groups. Some were not all that active. I think Traverse Indivisible and Leelanau were the most active. Since the election, there has been a group formed in Houghton. There's been one formed in Marquette. There's one in Charlevoix. They're talking about one in Petoskey. I'm going over to Grayling in April to meet with a group of people over there. All around Jack Bergman's district, Indivisible groups are popping up. And from what I hear from our regional Indivisible representative, this is happening everywhere. So it's just skyrocketing. Well, our membership since the election has grown on the order of about 600%.
600%? Wow.
Just to give you an example, our meeting attendance has gone up about tenfold. It would be higher than that, but we yet don't have a room big enough to hold everybody. We are tonight holding a monthly meeting, and we are having up to capacity. It's a room capacity of 100, and we probably are going to have 150 or more on by Zoom because they can't fit in that room.
Wow. All right. Now that is very, very encouraging news. That's awesome to hear. Okay. So this town hall event is happening this Saturday. When and where is it being held? And like you said, people will be able to watch it online as well.
They can only watch it online right now, unfortunately, because the room is filled. So there is an online. You can find us at traversindivisible.org. And there is a sign up link there to do live streaming. We're also available on Mobilize. You can find us on Mobilize. Again, only by the live streaming link. The meeting starts at 1 in the afternoon and goes till 2:30. If you're there in person, there'll be a social hour afterwards for a chance to network and maybe go over the recipes for those Jack Bergman drinks from Louisiana.
All right. And I will make sure to supply some links wherever people are getting this podcast so that way they will be able to visit you guys and also maybe watch the event online. One more question before I let you go. What about those who are thinking about either joining an Indivisible possible chapter around the state or that near them around the state, or maybe if they just happen not to have one around their area, you know, where should they go and what should they do?
The easiest thing to do is go to Indivisible, but go to the National Indivisible. There's a place right on their landing page where you can find a group near you. It's very easy to find. There's even a national map that you can just locate a group. If you can't find a group near you, you can create one of your own. And I will just say, like I'm going to be telling to all of the people that I've been talking to and the ones in Gaylord I will be, it's easy. It is very much grassroots, despite what the conservatives would have one think. It is very accessible, and they give great latitude to local groups to do what is most important and most appropriate for their areas. They are much more in a role of support, and they are very, very understanding and appreciative of how an Indivisible group would be run at the local level. They are just a great organization.
John DeSpelder, spokesperson and one of the leaders for Traverse Indivisible, thank you so very much for taking your time out to be on this week. And hey, love to have you back on sometime in the future, if that's okay.
Thank you, Pat. I'd love to do that.
He spent nearly 25 years working as a liberal voice in conservative talk radio across the state, and he's still a somewhat stable person. It's the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. You can find archives of the podcast, plus Pat's musings on other topics in written form at leftoflansing.com. Left of Lansing archives are available wherever you get your podcasts. And now Left of Lansing is available on YouTube. We'd like to thank Audio Boom for distributing all our episodes so we can share progressive, otherwise known as common sense, values across Michigan and the country. Now, here's Pat Johnston.
A special thanks again to John DeSpelder of Traverse Indivisible for joining me. He said there's already a full house for that event on Saturday, March 22nd, but I will still give you the link so that way you can watch the town hall online, which is from 1 to 2:30 p.m. And if that doesn't tell you the groundswell of support and the fire out there to fight back against MAGA Republicanism, then I don't know what it will take. And I'm hoping that Democrats are getting the message, because I'm sensing a Tea Party-like atmosphere that's really simmering right now. And there could be a slew of tough primary races if things don't get better soon for Democrats in office, or, you know what, if things don't even change soon for Democrats in office. Remember, you can follow me on Blue Sky, or on what is also known as Twitter, and also on Facebook. Follow and subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcast, and give it a 5-star review too. And follow and subscribe to Left of Lansing on YouTube. I was away for most of last week, so I haven't really had a chance to post some videos there in a bit, but that will change here this week and also this weekend. Time now for the Left of Lansing Last Call. This is something I wanted to talk about for the last few weeks, and it's something that I've got to get off my chest, if that's okay. And I heard this recent NPR story where Arab and Muslim voters in Michigan expressed some trepidation that Dear Leader Trump may have lied to them when he said that he loved them and that he wanted to bring peace in Gaza. Now, let's recall that Kamala Harris received only 23% of the vote in Eastern Dearborn compared to the 82% share Joe Biden enjoyed back in 2020. In total, Harris received 15,000 fewer votes in Dearborn than the votes that went for Biden 4 years earlier. And that has caused some resentment amongst some Democratic voters out there over how Dearborn residents back Trump over Harris. So much so that I'm detecting some sarcastic glee out there in social media after Columbia University pro-Palestinian student organizer Mahmoud Khalil was detained by ICE agents for supposedly being a supporter of Hamas since Khalil protested against the right-wing Israeli government's bombardment of Gaza. Now, it should be noted that there's been zero evidence out there that Khalil was engaging with Hamas, and the Musk-Trump regime hasn't offered any proof. Zero proof. Zero. But Khalil is also a permanent resident with a green card. I mean, he's played by the immigration rules that MAGA Republicans always seem to complain about. But since he dared protest the killings of his people by right-wingers in Israel, Khalil was arrested in New York and then flown down to Louisiana, where he is now currently sitting in a detention center. While a federal judge has blocked his deportation for now, this is still a shot across the bow kind of signal by the Trump regime. If they have the power to deport anyone that they feel is aligned with a terrorist group or anyone against an American ally or against Dear Leader himself, then they can be deported on a whim. Okay, and then this week, Israel ended a ceasefire in Gaza and bombed the hell out of that area again this week, killing over 400 Palestinians in Gaza. And let's also not forget how Dear Leader said that he wants to move Palestinians to other Arab nations so he and his oligarch friends can make Gaza into a new Riviera. So because of all this, and let's remember, this is just within the first 2 months of the regime getting back into power, many Arab American voters are now feeling betrayed and lied to, since Dear Leader said that he'd strive for peace in Gaza, but all he's been doing is whatever Bibi Netanyahu and Israel wants. He's not doing anything to push back. And now some Democratic supporters online keep asking Dearborn residents how they're feeling whenever Trump is hurting Arab Americans, either here in the U.S. or in the Middle East. They seem to be getting some kind of, I don't know, sadistic joy out of it. And let me tell you, that's not how you're going to win some of them back to your side. Look, many of them were angry for how Joe Biden gave Bibi a blank check to slaughter their people and how he showed zero resistance to Bibi whatsoever. And then Kamala Harris didn't do anything to reverse that resentment. I mean, that's just the plain truth, everyone. You know it. I know it. All she had to say was that she was going to fight for a ceasefire and that the killings must stop. And if they didn't stop, then she'd stop giving Bibi our weapons. And by the way, you remember when Trump and J.D. Vance were demanding Ukraine's President Zelensky to say thank you to them for America's backing of Ukraine against Putin and Russia? Why is it that they also have never demanded a thank you from Bibi? How come Zelensky owes them a thank you, but Bibi doesn't owe them one thank you whatsoever? Let you ponder that. Anyway, Democrats lost the Arab American vote because Biden and Harris didn't show really any kind of remorse or anger over Netanyahu's actions. They also didn't allow a Palestinian American to speak on the convention floor last year. Arab American voters backed Democrats big time for the past 20 years, and Democrats then just quickly abandoned them. And saying it would be worse under Trump was not a strategy. It was not a winning strategy. When things are already looking like hell, people can't tell the difference. Now, I know there's a strong right-wing fundamentalist movement within some Arab American circles, like when Hamtramck's city council voted to ban pride flags a couple years ago. And if those so-called leaders really want to align themselves with the bigoted white Christian nationalists on a couple of cultural issues, hey, be my guest. But guess what? They'll sell you out within a heartbeat. That being said, not all Arab Americans in Michigan agree to that kind of closed-mindedness. They want good things for their families. They want to earn a nest egg, send their kids to school, and live out the American dream. And they want to know that their rights to due process in this country are protected and that the slaughter of their people overseas will not only be condemned, but it will end. You know, simply, they just want to know they're being heard. And well, Democratic voters, just like how we have to hear the entire working class, that also includes our Arab American brothers and sisters who feel like Biden and Trump refuse to acknowledge their existence. I mean, that can change, but rather than taking gleeful and sarcastic shots at them and how they voted, maybe it's time for us to show empathy and to open up our arms to them. Not just because it's the politically right move to make, but it's just the right move to make. Plain and simple.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. Special thanks to John DeSpelder from Traverse Indivisible and for putting the heat on MAGA Republican Congressman Jack Bergman up there in the 1st District. See, that's the way to play offense, and that's the way to win the messaging and optics war. We win by outthinking, outworking, and outdebating them because progressive ideals are working class ideals, and even more, they are popular ideals. Going out and burning Teslas doesn't move the needle at all, and it only gives the Musk-Trump regime an out to declare that their critics are criminals and terrorists. And, as I just talked about, they are already trying to deport people here legally just because they protested against Israel. What happens when they want to up the ante and go after progressives and independents who are protesting against them? So please get the word out as much as possible that burning Tesla cars or vandalizing Tesla dealerships or vandalizing your neighbors who have a Tesla, that doesn't move the needle at all, and it just continues to hurt us in the optics and messaging war. You want to hurt Tesla? Keep doing what we're doing and let people know how Elon Musk is causing pain to millions of people in the United States and around the world just so he can enrich himself and his authoritarian, loving corporate tech bro friends. And then gleefully sit by and watch Tesla's stock continue to drop further and further and further. You can always email me, leftoflansing@gmail.com. Subscribe to the show and let others know about Michigan's premier progressive podcast around the state and around the country. Until next time, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston. Written by Pat Johnston. Researched by Pat Johnston. Edited by Pat Johnston. And hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.